Welcome to Commas.
Commas is all things tech.
You see culture and technology coming together.
Life hacks.
The practicality right now in the inefficiency of the internet of buying and selling stuff is extraordinary.
Entrepreneurship advice.
I think the first thing is you got to understand your business inside out.
Love and tech.
We've almost reduced dating to kind of this very momentary snap of a person.
It's gonna be a fire show.
I have yet to see something these days that's truly differentiated.
New advice and new inspiration every show.
This really is about the next generation of creators going faster, further than we did.
And now, Sequoia Blodgett.
Now let's start stacking them commas.
On this episode, we're going to talk about how to obtain financial freedom with financial expert Jeremiah Brown. And I have some crucial tips for all you last-minute tax preppers.
Entrepreneurship advice. Learn from the hottest and most successful investors, founders, and innovators in the game.
Determine your greatness.
It's time to get your knowledge up.
Okay, for sure.
What's poppin'? We've got special guest Jeremiah Brown in the building.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Today, we're going to learn everything there is to know, at least as much as we can, about financial freedom. But before we jump into that, I want to know a little bit about your background.
Excellent. Yeah. So I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York. I grew up in an underprivileged background, ended up playing basketball out of necessity. A lot of people in our communities, they either, you know, forced us to either play ball or get into entertainment. And I chose basketball. So that was my avenue into entrepreneurship, which is ironic. I can kind of go into that later, but
no, I'm curious okay. Now.
So basketball taught me a lot about the world of entrepreneurship. Like, you have to obviously compete, all right, amongst your peers, and also you got to find creative ways to stand out. And for me, ball was the first introduction of entrepreneurship. But what people didn't understand was when I was playing basketball, I was also expanding my horizons on the back end when I was in the house. I started my first blog site when I was 16 years old.
Okay.
And I was making $800 a week.
Tell us more about that.
Yeah, no worries. So I was always into cars. And so I decided to just create a blog site. And I used Blogspot. I kind of remember vividly. And I added like Google AdSense and stuff and AdWords and stuff like that. And I had about, I think, what was it, like 3,000 daily active subscribers to my channel. It's crazy because I used to talk about Top Gear. It was a TV show that was really prominent at the time. So I was able to get like $800 a week out of that. And my mom would come in every day and she would say to me, like, why are you on the computer? Like, aren't you supposed to be working out, playing ball or getting a job or something? And she didn't know I was actually...
You're like, this is my job.
Right. Like, I was making money doing this. But so fast forward. That was obviously my first real introduction to entrepreneurship. I leveraged basketball to get a scholarship, and then I ended up at Elon University. And there was the aha moment. So when I went to that school, I realized that everyone around me wasn't of the same hue, meaning, you know, obviously same culture. So I had to experience, that was my first experience of witnessing affluent, communities. And I would come to class in like this beat up Hyundai and my roommate actually would come to class in a Range Rover. And I never understood that, but I was really curious, right? So I asked him like, yo, how is it that you're coming in with a Range Rover and I have this, Hyundai? And he said, well, listen, my dad, he actually works in banking and I didn't know what banking was.
Okay.
Right. I didn't even know what finance was.
Okay.
So, it's funny, I was actually doing all of this stuff, but I didn't have the, I would say the business acumen or maybe not the acumen, sorry, the lingo of the business world. So I was just doing that, but I was always curious. So I was asking him all of these questions. And then he introduced me to this thing called finance and investment banking.
Mm.
And yeah, from there it was, I wanted to learn everything about it. And his dad actually worked for BCG.
BCG?
Boston Consulting Group. Sorry, he was the VP there.
Okay.
And his son actually was trying to get into the world of finance, and I just did what his son was doing.
You're like, I'm just gonna copy that guy.
You know what I mean? Like, why not? I mean, he obviously has the proven record, and he showed me that that's where the wealth is. So I pretty much followed that, and it wasn't until I created my mobile application that I actually figured out that I can integrate technology with the world of business and finance. And so that's pretty much how I got to, you know, obviously where I am today. So I grew the technology company. I had 23,000 users in the first week. His dad approached me and he asked to buy the app for me.
Okay, so let's stop for one mm-hmm. second. So what exactly was the application?
Yeah, so the app was called Cyclone HD. And what it did was the light would rotate around a cylinder, similar to like an arcade game where the light obviously rotates around and you would have to hit it on the jackpot. You know what I mean? So
I've played that.
Right. So I kind of just spun it to an app and I didn't even know that I had a audience outside of the U.S. So a large part of my user base was in Malaysia. They were in China. And mind you, I was like 20 years old. So I didn't really understand the magnitude of scale. So I was just doing it. So his dad pretty much approached me after he told his dad what I was doing. And he said to me, he said, okay, we're going to get into business together. Mm. And I did not have a corporate setup. I didn't have a corporate structure. I didn't have, you know, all the obviously implications to have a legitimate business. I was just making revenue. So he said, listen.
Which was enough for his dad.
That was literally, like, he was like, oh, wow, okay, now I can kind of, you know, mix it and make it work for me. But what he did tell me was, and what he taught me was, he said, in any game, you have to know the rules. Mm. There are rules in every single game. And in this game, there are definitely rules to it. So he walked me to a bank and he said, okay, go into the bank and you're going to go in and say, listen, I want to open up a business checking account and I want to be the operating principal of the business. I had no idea what he was talking about. I was
just
like,
I'm just going to do that.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm just going to do it, whatever. And he said, okay, if you can do that, I will give you $75,000 for this company.
And that was a lot at the time.
At the time. I mean, it was amazing. I'm a 20-year-old, you know, college kid. I'm like, okay, perfect. So $75,000, I could pay half of my tuition, and I could have money left over for whatever I want to do, you know? So, I pretty much opened up the business checking account, and I was the operating principal of it. And he literally gave me the $75,000 check.
So for those who don't know what an operating principal is, explain that.
Yeah, so pretty much I would have controlling interests of the company.
And then the dad came in as the investor?
Correct, as the investor and chairman. So he would actually serve on our fake board.
Which was you and the dad.
Exactly, pretty much. So
this reminds me of my first startup.
You know what I mean? So like it's so crazy how, you know, this, for me, I actually stumbled into entrepreneurship. And I didn't understand the complexity until I actually had to go through the experience. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even learn this in school. It's funny because when I was in school, I was learning, my major was finance, but I learned absolutely nothing about finance. Or maybe I was sleeping in class. I'm not sure.
Something didn't transpire.
Exactly. So, I learned a lot about, you know, business and the world of money from outside of, obviously the education system. So when he gave me the check, right, he actually became a partner in the business.
Right.
And when I had that liquidity event, the first thing I did with it was search real estate.
Okay.
And the reason why I did that was because I remember my grandmother, she sold her house when I told her not to. This was a long time ago, but she sold her house because of pre-gentrification. So, you know, I was saying, listen, what you can do is you can have, and this is before I even acquired the real, you know, acumen, right? I just knew based on common knowledge and common sense. I'm like, listen, if this property is going up, I'm sure you can hire a renter to rent it out for more than what, you know, obviously the mortgage is.
Grandma, you got to learn the game.
I was like, Grandma, you got to do it. And she eventually sold it. Obviously, that money kind of depleted. So I set on a quest to not repeat the same mistake. So I was like, all right, this money, I'm not going to buy a car. I'm not going to buy a watch or whatever. I'm just going to buy some real estate. So I bought my first property in Delaware. I remember it. It was like this $79,000 unit. It was a 2-bedroom, 1,000 square feet. And the mortgage was like $300.
Oh, my God.
I know, right? But the market rent was crazy because the market rent was $850.
So you came up.
Oh, what? I came up on that one. So I liquidated that unit and then bought some others, including one in Vegas. And the one in Vegas that I got actually is down a block from the new stadium that's being built.
So you still have that property?
Yes, still do.
So let's back up a little bit, because you said you had a liquidity event, which essentially, for you guys who don't know, means that he was able to sell the company, right?
Yes, correct.
And so you sold it at $75,000?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. And then you took that money and then you invested that into property?
Correct.
And then you sold that property?
Yep.
And that wasn't a flip, that was just...
No, it was, well, I made a profit on it, but no, okay. It wasn't a flip yet.
Okay, so it wasn't like a foreclosed property, you just absolutely bought it, it was, and sold it for more.
So what it was a turnkey property, meaning that it was obviously well-maintained, it already had a tenant in it, and, you know, I just purchased that unit. You know, obviously the tenant started paying me, so I immediately had cash flow. After a couple of years, the property value increased, and not only did I have the cash flow, I liquidated it and I got a profit off of it. So it was a win-win.
Yeah. So why do you think it's so important for folks to have cash flow? Because I know you talk a lot about this.
Yeah, definitely. So I feel like, you know, cash flow is, I would say, invisible money. So that's something that comes in with initial effort and you can have it in perpetuity for as long as you obviously hold on to that asset. I think a lot of times we look for active income, meaning income that we actually have to contribute our time and, you know, sweat equity into. And sometimes those aren't really guaranteed. What I focus on is more of the passive side. And that obviously is the cash flow. Even when I invest in stocks, I, you know, invest in dividend paying stocks. So stocks that actually return cash to me. So my focus in life is cash flow. Everything has to return cash. If it's not, you know, that, it's more of a speculation on my end.
He said he don't want it.
Nah. It depends. I mean, you can definitely make money off of a flip. Obviously, you have to have some sort of knowledge base, and timing is everything when it comes to that. But for me, I'd rather, you know, play the long game.
So how many properties do you own at this point?
Right now, I own maybe about 4.
Okay, and where are those located?
Everywhere.
Like wherever I can get them for cheap.
Yeah, so like Texas, Arizona, Las Vegas, stuff like that.
And then what are other revenue streams that you now that have that are creating passive income for you?
Yeah, so I have a book. I actually have 2 books. One book is called Bank on You, and that is basically reimagining finance in the 21st century and for millennials. You know, I have everything from how to obviously generate cash flow to understanding Bitcoin and cryptocurrency.
We will get into that.
Definitely. To, you know, God's money, which is gold and silver. That's always a hedge against inflation. So I have a lot of things to help you increase your, you know, financial knowledge in that sense. So I call it an MBA wrapped in 180-page book.
Nice,
and it's broken
nice.
Down and simplified in a way that is for us.
That's amazing. Yeah. So let's get into other ways. You talked about cryptocurrency, and right. I'm currently going through some taxes about that. It's making me feel a certain way. But I won't get into that on this year podcast. But so talk about crypto and why you think crypto investing right now is super important for people.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, I would say cryptocurrency is obviously going to be the forefront of here's the thing about crypto. It's the blockchain technology, right? The underlying technology that is the most powerful tool, because what it does is it creates this decentralized platform for people. That means you don't have to rely on a third party, a middleman. So I think that technology is the future. Now, there's certain cryptocurrencies that we're using now that are obviously like bait and switch that, you know, like, you know, I'm not going to name any, but you understand. So, but I think Bitcoin, cryptocurrency for sure will be the future of currency once we understand the unit economics around it.
So what do you think it's going to take for adoption, for people to really understand what it means to invest in crypto and it really for the world to adopt cryptocurrency and use it as is, like as a currency?
Yeah, there are a few things. And I kind of relate it to gold up into a certain point. I do believe that there is a scarce amount of cryptocurrency, Bitcoin particularly, same with gold and silver. However, the difference is, to me, I feel like cryptocurrency hasn't really experienced an economic depression or downturn.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's pretty new. Gold has history. You know, so gold has been, people would claim that Bitcoin is a bubble. And gold is a bubble, but gold has been a bubble for 5,000 years.
Which is fine.
Exactly.
I'm good with that bubble.
You know, but I just think personally, we have to understand the technology behind it first. And I think the learning curve there is pretty complex. I think once it becomes simplified and ubiquitous and obviously adopted by, unfortunately, it's funny because the antithesis of it, but once it's adopted by infrastructure within the government, then people will trust it more. You have to establish trust with this, and you have to understand the knowledge base behind it in order to start, you know, investing in it.
Right. And so for people who don't understand crypto, what are some ways that they can get more information about it? And what are some tips that you have for people to start investing in crypto?
Oh, yeah, yeah. For one, you can read my book. No, I have I have like a step-by-step guide to understand cryptocurrency. But there are a lot of tools that are out there that you can use. There are cryptocurrency podcasts that actually educate people on how to invest. There are, you know, numerous of resources to, you know, learn about the space. But I think ultimately you have to understand what you're investing in and what is it before you decide to put all your money into it, because you don't want to play that capital gains, you know, game, which is basically, you know, you're kind of buying it. I call it the greater fool theory. So it's like you don't want to invest in something you don't know to hopefully suspect that someone else is going to pay more for it. You know, you want to understand what you're getting into for sure.
Okay, so what are some tips in terms of what types of coins people should be looking at?
Oh, got you. Okay. So I look for infrastructure when I invest in blockchain. So infrastructure means something that is the platform in which other coins will be on it. So an example of that would be Ethereum. It would be obviously Bitcoin. I like Ripple. Ripple is a pretty good coin for the future. It just has a lot of volume right now. Like it's not really scarce, so that's why the price is so low. It's suppressed. But I think once they figure that out, it can kind of increase the value. But yeah, for me, I look for infrastructure.
Explain Stellar, and how do you feel about Stellar?
Well, I mean, I'm not really too knowledgeable about Stellar.
Okay.
Yeah, if you can.
I'm a little knowledgeable about Stellar.
Do your thing.
Made a little investment.
All right, I'm going to step
back. Okay, so from what I understand, and I could be completely wrong, is Stellar basically helps to convert transactions at no fee. So,
ooh, wow, okay.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. now Coinbase recently adopted Stellar.
Mm-hmm.
And now they are on their platform, so you can make your investments on for Stellar as well.
Okay.
So what used to be a wire transfer, so say you wanted to, you know, transfer U.S. dollars to yen, right, mm-hmm. which would take this long wire transfer, and then from there, you would also have to pay the fees.
Mm-hmm.
So Stellar patches together its network, which lets the transfer happen in, like, seconds.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and then there's no fees involved.
That's
right?
Actually really good. I actually like that.
And
technology.
So yeah, and so right now you can invest on Coinbase from Stellar. So, but to me, Stellar has tokens, and it also has its Lumen, which is its cryptocurrency, but it's also a platform. You know
yes,
what I mean? So
yes,
there's
definitely.
Like layers to it. So
yeah, yeah.
Is that what you mean when you're saying
absolutely
like, infrastructure? Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I think that's cool. Okay. I may need to invest in that.
Go look and see, because Coinbase has a whole little like, okay. They give you like Stellar. Actually, they give you dollars to.
Got it.
So if you guys are interested, go to Coinbase
got
and
it.
Sign up for your account.
And funny, I think people should understand. I think you spoke about this briefly before we got on the tax implications of investing in crypto.
Because oh
people don't know, if you trade crypto for crypto, you're still liable to pay taxes.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
100%.
So I think that's another barrier to entry, you know, understanding the tax code and the tax liabilities behind, you know, trading these cryptocurrencies. So that's something that you can look into. It's in my book as well. Kind of lay it out as well for you guys to understand.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I want to get into financial freedom, because obviously our community has, I don't know what the hell happened.
Listen.
Oh, so
man.
Confused.
Yes, yes.
Me included. So what are some tips that you have in terms of us becoming financial free? Like what should we be looking to do?
Ownership. I attribute, you know, the basis of financial freedom to ownership. You know, obviously, I read a study, and I'm sure you probably know about this one, but it said by 2053, the median black wealth or net worth will be zero. And I think this was a Fortune post. But
yeah, which is frightening.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. You know what I mean? And it actually, you know, tells a lot about how we're investing, you know, and what we're spending our money on. So I think shifting the mindset of understanding how we wear our wealth. You know, a lot of us attribute wealth to wearing it on our sleeve, And I think we should start to have a better perspective of someone who invests their wealth as opposed to just showing it. You know what I mean? I think that should be, I would say, glorified. Because if it's glorified, then obviously people will aspire to do it.
Right.
You know?
Right. And but, so you said earlier, you mentioned real estate, obviously crypto.
Correct.
What are some other investments?
Stocks, obviously. For me, again, I actually invest in stocks that produce cash flow, that return cash to me. You know, we actually saw the recent move with Lyft and how it went IPO. I think that attributes to the greater fool theory because people don't really understand what they're getting themselves into. You have a lot of industry people who already are invested in Lyft who are actually selling their shares to the open market, to the public. So people are taking it, are buying into those shares at its highest valuation.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So if the valuation drops, then you're going to lose your money. For me, I normally wait. I wait like 6 months to buy into an IPO. I never buy an IPO. And I would never recommend someone do that. If you can do that, obviously, if you want to. But me personally, I don't. So I would invest in companies that return cash, pay a dividend, and have good economics. And I look at it with three simple things, right? One is you look at the financials of the company. So these are financial statements, income statements, balance sheets, cash flow statements, et cetera. But if you don't really understand that, you can look at the price to earnings. It's literally on Yahoo Finance. It's a thing called P.E. ratio. P.E. ratios over 25 always indicates a bubble. So that means you're going to be paying. You're actually going to have to wait the amount of time to receive that dollar that you put into that stock. So if the P.E. ratio is 25, then you have to wait 25 years to get back that dollar. So,
oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So those are things that, people need to kind of understand when they do go about investing in stocks and stuff like that. But for the most part, make sure when you do invest that you understand that a stock should be returning cash to you. Otherwise, it is a speculation. Mm. I like gold. Excuse me. I like gold and silver. Again, I call it Earth's money, God's money. Gold and silver has always been here, you know, and it's been used by the Egyptians, you know what I mean, by the Romans. And I think it's going to be used by our great grandkids, even if they use cryptocurrency, they'll still have that as a hedge.
Yep.
So for me, I call it wealth insurance. And it's literally an insurance on money. It's actually a play on the dollar. It's a checks and balances. So that's something that you can invest in to, if you are afraid that there will be some sort of market volatility in the future, that's something you can either, you know, just use as a hedge against the dollar.
So we talking about my grandma's gold that she's keeping.
There
in
you
the
go. There you go. Make sure you hold on to that. That's for real.
When God willeth, you know, happens, yes. I will hold on to that.
Absolutely.
Got you. Absolutely. All right. So going back to investing in stocks or companies, early stage companies, because you talked about IPOs earlier. A lot of people are waiting for that IPO, but a lot of people who are knowledgeable are getting in before those IPOs happen. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about like equity crowd or not equity? Equity crowdfunding.
Well, I think that's a great way to get in early, and you want to see with stuff like that. Obviously, you have to have some sort of network. You have to have somebody who's knowledgeable in that space, or you have to have money that you are willing to lose. Play money, I call it. I think the average person has less than $1,000 in savings. If you are that person, then you should want to have more of a knowledge on everything that your money is being allocated towards. But I'm definitely open to crowdfunding, even loaning money, you know, to your friend at an interest rate, having them sign a promissory note, you know, that if they don't honor it, then, you know, you got to collect that money, you know, but stuff like that, obviously. Can help pretty much offer opportunity for someone else and return cash to you while you wait.
So do you think at this point, if you can figure out the investment game, you don't necessarily even need a 9-to-5 as far as I'm concerned.
No.
Right? Yeah. So if you can navigate those waters, so what are some ways for somebody who is working a 9-to-5 who's like, I want to transition out of this and I want to have passive income. Like, what are some ways to make that transition or make that jump?
Yeah, no worries. Well, in my book, I always attribute it to understanding your personal equity, meaning your net worth, how much you're worth. When we look up, you know, our favorite celebrities, we always look up their net worth, right? That means that if they sell all their liabilities, this is how much money that they will have after they sell or they liquidate everything. So if your net worth is negative, that means you you have a lot of work to do. Either you have to obviously pay down debt, or you have to build an income stream, another income stream, subsidize whatever you're doing. So that's number one, right? Understanding your financial situation. When you do that, you want to now focus on step two, which is saving. It's bare minimum. Obviously, these things are things that we know, but we don't really practice. So you save 10%. I attribute it to paying yourself, taxing yourself. We all pay taxes at the end of the year. You should be taxing yourself every time you get paid or every time you get some sort of income. For me, even if I get a liquidity event where I have a lump sum of cash, I always tax myself. You know, so that's another thing I would attribute to doing. And third, knowledge. Knowledge is always key. It's something that no one can take from you. And the more knowledgeable you are with finance, the better your net worth will be, pretty much.
Right. Let's talk about the FICO score. How important is the FICO score? And how do you leverage the FICO score to increase your net worth?
Oh, man, credit is number one.
Credit is king.
Credit is king, literally. I think, you know.
Contrary to popular belief.
No, our country is run on debt and is also run on credit. So you definitely have to focus on building your personal credit. There are a lot of ways to do it. If you start out with a low score, the first thing to do is get a secure credit account. Secure credit card. That can boost your credit score up. Another thing you can do is be an authorized user on a friend's account, your mother's account. So authorized user is different from co-signing.
Talk about the difference.
Right. So you co-sign on a loan. If the person defaults on that loan, you actually bear that responsibility. Now, if you put someone on as an authorized user, that means that they are added to your credit line, but they don't assume your credit liability. So if your credit, let's say you have a credit card, right? And your credit card, you're in great standing. And your cousin has like a 500 credit score. You can put him on your credit line and that will increase his score after 45 days. And he will adopt your history from that credit card. So that can boost his score up literally up to 100 points. So
that's Jeremiah, are you saying that you can put me on your credit line?
I mean, listen. See, I'm not gonna lie. I'm normally charged for it. No, you can do it. Yeah, you can.
Is that what you're telling me?
Yes,
right now?
Yes, you can do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I learned recently, and I could be completely butchering this because I'm still in the process of learning. So once you have your personal FICO score up to a certain amount, then you get business credit. And
right.
You could, and instead of getting a business loan, because I know so many people are like, oh, I need to get venture capital. I need to get investors. And the percentage of you guys that are going to get that are like slim to none.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there is now, well, not even now, I guess it's been a thing. But for me, I'm just learning about it, is actually taking business credit and then actually starting your business with that. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So when I invest in real estate, I never buy property in my name. I literally buy property in my business name. And I also have a partnership with Dun & Bradstreet in which I pretty much, they're my creditors, basically. They track pretty much how well I'm paying and stuff like that. So my business credit is great. My personal credit can be terrible, but as long as I have great business credit, I can take on the same amount of loan and get the same amount of, benefits as if I have great personal. So that's a great way to subsidize. If you have bad personal credit, you can target building your business credit to grow it.
Awesome. And are there any other tips that you would leave us before we kind of...
So with business, you need a trade line. So your trade line is if you own a ice cream store or whatever, you have to be in good standing with your distributors and manufacturers and stuff like that. You can call them and ask them to be added to the trade line, and that pretty much helps track your performance. That boosts your credit score up as well. Also, pretty much the same as if you have personal credit, making your payments on time, that also helps. And accruing debt, make sure if you do accrue debt, that it's debt that you can pay for and it's low. And you want to build that history. They want to see that you're actually building the history in order to for you to get the benefit of building that credit score in your business. But I think business credit is literally something that is a hidden gem and something that our community don't really, you know.
Listen, I just found out last literally. Week and I was like, what is this? So, yeah, no, definitely you guys look into business credit. Yeah. Okay, cool. So, of course, bank on you. If you guys don't have the book, grab that. You have some other books, too. Tell us about them.
Yeah, yeah. So I have a book called Financial Freedom, I Only Hope. It was based on the Jay-Z's 444 album. And, yeah, I was so inspired that I was like, wow, I mean,
people need to write a book.
Yeah, let me write a book on this. And I wrote a book in 2 months, became a bestseller. And that actually helped me spearhead the knowledge that I have to just share to the world. You know what I mean? I'm not saying I'm a genius or I know everything. I just know what I know. And I know that I can offer value. So I literally took everything on my mind. I call it my intellectual property. Wrote it down and just handed it to the world. So it's available.
Beautiful. That's awesome. Yeah. So for anybody who's trying to find you, how do we locate you?
Oh, yeah. You can find me on LinkedIn. My name is Jeremiah Brown. On LinkedIn, you can find me on Instagram. I am Jeremiah B on Instagram and Twitter. I am Jeremiah B and Facebook, Jeremiah Brown.
It's life hacks.
Life hacking, baby.
Tech tips and tools for everyday needs.
Tap in.
Control, copy these shortcuts and simplify your life.
You heard us. You heard
what
us.
Is up, you guys? It's that time again and taxes are amongst us. So I'm going to give you some tips to make it easier on yourself. These are courtesy of TurboTax, so let's get into it. First of all, when you're contributing to your retirement accounts, this is the time to do it. So if you have the traditional IRA or the Roth IRA, make sure you make all of your deductible contributions because you have the opportunity to lower your tax bill with those contributions. So for example, if you put away $5,000 a year for 20 years in an investment with an average annual 8% return, your $100,000 in contributions will grow to $247,000. Now think about it on the flip side. The same investment in a taxable account would grow to only $194,000 if you're in the 25% federal tax bracket, and even less if you live in a state with a tax state income. So make sure you do all of your contributions. To qualify for your full annual reductions, you have to either A, not be eligible to participate in a company retirement plan. If you are eligible, you must have an adjusted gross income of $63,000 or less for singles or $101,000 or less for married couples filing jointly. If you are not eligible for a company plan but your spouse is, your traditional IRA contribution is fully deductible as long as your combined gross income does not exceed $189,000. So the maximum IRA contribution you can make is $5,500 or $6,500 if you're over the age of 50, and that is that. When you're choosing from the Roth IRA or the traditional IRA, although the Roth contributions are not deductible, it could be a better choice because all withdrawals from the Roth can be tax-free in retirement. So think about it this way. Withdrawals from a traditional IRA are fully taxable in retirement. So to contribute to the full $5,500 or the $6,500 if you're over the age of 50, to the Roth IRA, you must earn $120,000 or less in a year if you're single and $189,000 if you're married and you're filing a joint return. So I know that was a lot of numbers for you guys, but really pay attention to those because those deductibles can be really important, right? Additionally, if you have an HSA, which is a health savings plan, you can also make deductions with that. If you have a high deductible insurance plan, you can still contribute to your HSA and claim it as a deduction regardless of whatever your income is. So HSA contribution limits are $3,450 for individuals and $6,900 for families. Plus, if you're over 55, you have an additional $1,000 in catch-up contributions to those limits. So make sure you're looking at your HSA and seeing what your deductions are there. And later, I'm going to get into a lot more deductions. But right now, I'm just going to run through the tips from TurboTax. And I will also do a quick overview of how you use TurboTax because I am definitely a fan. Okay, so when you are planning out your taxes, and I know we are at the home stretch at this point, make sure you're organizing all of your records because it just makes it that much easier. You don't want to be running around pulling records from the last minute. It's super difficult to find stuff. You got to call jobs. You got to call if you are freelancing. You got to call these companies. You're going to ask them to send you certain 1099s and, you know, it just becomes a mess. So make sure you're collecting all of those forms over time. You want to have last year's tax returns. You want to have your W-2s. You want to have your 1099s and any receipts that you've collected and just have those together and ready to go. And what you can do is you can print out a tax checklist to help you gather all the documentation that you'll need. And also, you can group similar documents together, pulling them from different folders can be an issue. So just make sure everything is nice and organized. Make sure you know all the prices you pay for any stocks or funds that you sold, because you're going to need that information. And if you don't, call your broker and ask them, because you don't want to be guessing. Also, any rental properties, know your income details from that. Look into any municipal bonds that you have. And make sure you know the details for those as well, all right? So again, going back to TurboTax, my favorite platform, you can get all of your forms that you need to fill out through the platform. And if you don't have TurboTax, obviously you can go to irs.gov and you can download those forms there. Make sure you have all of your itemized deductions together, just because it's going to be so much easier, again, to go through everything and make sure that you get those deductions, right? One deduction that I'm super excited about this year, and actually I filed for this deduction last year and I wasn't really aware of it, but it's been a game changer because I have seen those numbers and the returns go boop, 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 right up. And that deduction is your home office tax. So I work remote, so I've been able to deduct the home office tax, which is really cool because not only can you deduct your rent, you have utilities, insurance, any housekeeping. You can deduct all of those things as expenses within your home office tax. And so those things are super exciting. Additionally, if you're a freelancer, if you're self-employed, that's also considered your home office. So you can do a standard deduction with that as well. So definitely think about those things. Business write-offs, make sure if you like drive for Uber, you rent your house for Airbnb, those actually qualify as business ownership, right? You want to get the form Schedule C and fill those out, and those are constituted as write-offs. So just a general rule of thumb so you guys know, any freelancers, you can write off expenses for business-related things that are necessary. So anything that you knew that you absolutely had to have for your business in order to operate, those are all considered write-offs as well. So if you have dependents or you have kids, you can obviously claim them. You know, they are totally a deduction. So make sure you do that. Another thing for this year, I mean, for me in particular, if you've done any cryptocurrency investments, it is so imperative that you file those in your taxes because they are a part of that process, right? So the easiest way is to go to the platform that you invested your crypto through. So for me, it was Coinbase. You download all of the documentation that includes transactions, buys, sells for all of your coins, not just Bitcoin, Ethereum, Stellar, anything that you have. Binance is your transaction platform or your exchange. So you have to download the documentation from there too. So the easiest thing that I've found is to go to bitcoin.tax and actually insert the information into the platform. And you can do that automatically or you can do that manually. Automatically worked best for me. So that way it'll compile all of your crypto taxes for you. And then you can insert those or that information straight into TurboTax. Makes it super simple and seamless. I'm just not like about all the messiness. Like, I like to streamline things. So as much organization that you can have, the better. So again, we all know that that deadline is right around the corner, like literally right around the corner, right? And if you need an extension, you can absolutely file an extension. You can file a form 4868, and that's considered an extension. It'll give you 6 months to actually get your taxes done. And now the thing for me that I think is kind of interesting about an extension, you still have to kind of guesstimate what your taxes would be, and you have to pay them even if you do file an extension. So I don't know the actual benefit of filing an extension, but I know some people do it. And if you need it, the form is there. So go for it. Also, again, going back to filing electronically, there's other platforms aside from TurboTax, but I get super excited about TurboTax because it is just so seamless. Like, when I used it, it just gave me from point A to point B how to go through the process. So the way that it worked is you inputted all of your information. It takes you, actually, if you did it before, you already have the information in there. So it takes you to your tax return from last year. So it kind of automates the information. So you can say, yes, this changed, no, this is different, et cetera. And it starts to calculate your refund. And you can see if you owe or if they're going to give you a refund as you're processing all of the numbers. And it's so seamless. It's like so no-brainer. So I love TurboTax. And every single time you can pick up where you left off. So it saves everything for you. It puts all of your documentation in there. It puts your W-2s in there, your 1099s in there. And it just makes it so that you don't have to do a lot of thinking, which is something that I just don't like to do. So that's definitely a plus. Now, the cool thing about TurboTax also is they've implemented this year CPAs. So if you think, you know, you put all your information in there and you're like, oh, this isn't right. Something's not right. It doesn't feel right. Like I have questions. You can honestly just pay for a CPA on demand. And for me, I just think that's so beneficial because if you have a CPA that can go through the stuff with you, normally they're really expensive, but TurboTax offers them for a really good price. I think it's like $150 or something. But if you bring that person on, you are so much less likely to get audited. I mean, I think TurboTax does a pretty good job of making sure that you don't get audited to begin with because they're basically doing all of the filings for you. So I think they're really good at that. But if you absolutely need somebody to come on board and kind of help you sort through some things, my taxes are pretty streamlined, but I'm sure a lot of you guys have other elements. You know, people have personal business or personal taxes, business taxes, and all kinds of things. So, you know, if you need somebody, you can absolutely get somebody through TurboTax, which I think is super dope. All right, I want to jump into some more deductions with you guys because there are some hidden deductions that people just don't really know about. And I think that, you know, it's really easy to not know what you don't know, right? So state taxes have an actual deduction. So you can do write-offs from your state taxes if those state taxes were not taxed to you. Does that make sense? So basically, if your state doesn't do taxes, because some states don't do taxes, you could actually go and look at your purchases for like vehicles and like boats and airplanes. If you have managed to purchase an airplane, I don't even know why that's on there. Who's been buying planes? Tell me. You can go ahead and you can file the taxes as a deduction in terms of getting any type of state taxes from that. So you can make that a deduction on your taxes. Any reinvested dividends. So if you've done any, obviously investing, any dividends, you can file for a deduction on those. They're not necessarily a deduction, but they're a subtraction because those your investments are going to get taxed. So they help you subtract those dividends. You can definitely look that up and find out more detail because there's tons of detail on it, but that's definitely a deduction that you should look into. Don't forget all of your charitable contributions. If you guys went to the Goodwill and dropped off your clothes or anything like that, make sure you have your receipts. You can totally use those as a deduction as well. Student loans, interest paid are a definite deduction. Earned income credit tax is one that's it's kind of been out there, but I think some people may skip over it. So if you're a lower income person, your income comes under a certain amount, you can file for this tax as well as a deduction. You can see the eligibility on the IRS website to see if you qualify for that, but it's absolutely a great deduction to look into. Also, your estate taxes that you paid last spring, you can deduct those as well. I saw that TurboTax will also take those out for you. So that's so cool. And of course, if you bought any property and you were refinancing mortgage, those are deductions too. So these are just some overview deductions of what you can do when you are filing those taxes. It becomes a game for me. I'm like, how many deductions can I get, right? So make sure you look into those and make sure you're filing. And make sure if all else fails and you need to put in that request for an extension, that you do so as soon as possible.
This is The Plug.
You know who's The Plug.
It's time to get caught up on the hottest in tech.
Keep it locked, you heard?
With Sequoia Blodgett.
I see you, little mama.
I launched my first company, 7 a.m., in 2014 after a long stint of working in the entertainment industry as a commercial and music video director. it was hard. Even though I was venture-backed by one of the biggest VCs in the game, I still was so confused as to how to actually run, grow, and scale the company. I didn't understand how to convert customers quickly and efficiently. I didn't understand which marketing tools to use and how to create sales funnels. I didn't understand staying niche in the beginning and not boiling the ocean. I didn't understand how to stay motivated during extreme times of loneliness and not getting the results I was expecting. After several years, we ended up closing the doors. I started studying hundreds of really successful entrepreneurs to find out how they not only kept the lights on, but were scaling rapidly. After officially walking away from my first company in 2016, several years later, I launched Commas, a virtual entrepreneurship resource center. Yes, we're actually a company. I built it to help you guys understand why raising capital too fast will actually hurt you, why you need a team around you to iterate quickly and stay sane, why your business has to stand out because so many people are doing the exact same thing. There are no new ideas, and why it's important not to push your personal life to the back burner. Consider Commas as your entrepreneurship resource guide so you can avoid making the same mistakes that I did. We cover all things from product to marketing to publicity and fundraising. You can learn more about Commas, the actual platform, by visiting commastheseries.com. You can also hit us up on our socials at Commas the Series. Until next week, it's your girl Sequoia, and I'm out.